Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Obesity Medicine Association's podcast, Obesity, a Disease. I'm Dr. Allison Rhodes, an obesity medicine physician practicing with the Ohio State University Wexner Medical Center's Comprehensive Weight Management Program. And in this new series, we are exploring how obesity intersects with a wide range of medical specialties. We'll be diving deep into how different fields are tackling obesity, both the challenges and the opportunities for patient care. Today, we're lucky to be joined by Dr. Samson Payne, Chair of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Southwestern Vermont Medical Center. Dr. Samson Payne, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rhodes, for the opportunity to be here. It's such an important conversation, and I'm glad that we're shining a light on how obesity intersects with women's health. So as you mentioned, I'm a board certified OBGYN, but I'm also certified in obesity and lifestyle medicine. And I think that this allows me to have a unique perspective. I get to see both the clinical realities and practice and the opportunities for change at maybe a broader level. So I'm excited to be here.
I'm particularly curious because obviously with the rates of obesity in the United States, so many physicians from any specialty, you know, do see a greater number of patients presenting with obesity to care, but especially you and, you know, seeing primarily female patients and with your unique specialties, how often do you see patients with obesity in your practice and what are some of the most common issues they come in to see you for?
So honestly, every day, right? More than 40% of women here in the US are living with obesity. So this is not a rare subgroup. It's the majority of the patients that we actually see. The most common issues that we see on a daily basis are irregular cycles, polycystic ovarian syndrome, challenges with fertility, managing pregnancy risks. So I still catch babies as well. So risks like gestational diabetes and preeclampsia. But honestly, one of the biggest issues is stigma. So patients often tell me that they've delayed care because of negative experiences that they've previously had. I remember one patient told me that it was the first person that they had seen that didn't necessarily focus on weight for the whole appointment, right? You're kind of looking at that whole person approach. And that kind of really stuck with me, which is probably why I ended up incorporating what I do today.
That's some really powerful stuff. Getting back to thinking about obesity and how it really does affect a woman's, you know, reproductive years, can you share a little bit about how obesity in particular affects menstrual cycles and female fertility?
Yeah, so obesity can disrupt the normal communication between the brain, the ovaries, and the uterus. So that often leads to less predictable ovulation, which can in turn mean less predictable cycles, menses, periods, whichever word we're choosing. We can have irregular cycles and sometimes even infertility. We often talk about insulin. So insulin resistance can be a major driver. So when that insulin is elevated, it can interfere with that hormone balance and then in turn the ovulation.
In terms of insulin resistance, is this a condition that you're seeing arising on its own? I feel like there's also a very strong connection there with PCOS. How is that linked as well in terms of affecting a woman's fertility?
Yeah, so PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome, I often think about it as probably a spectrum disease. There's probably lots of different versions. We just happen to have lumped it under one particular term. It's often characterized, like we just mentioned about those irregular cycles. We can often have higher androgen levels, and that's again, certain types of hormones. Particularly, we think of things like testosterone, and they can be exhibited in different ways, whether that's acne, so skin changes, hair changes, and sometimes we can often see things like infertility. The hard piece is how it's named is PCOS, so polycystic ovarian syndrome. People often think about the cysts that we might potentially see. But again, often these cysts are really more what we call follicles. So you get these lots of little tiny eggs that never go on to become that one big dominant follicle, which means that you don't have a regular ovulation. You don't have that regular cycle. So it's not necessarily that you once had an ultrasound and you saw a cyst there. It's a little bit more complicated than that. But obesity can make those symptoms much more pronounced, and can also increase long-term risks for things like diabetes and heart disease as well. So it's almost like a two-way relationship. PCOS is strongly associated with that insulin resistance, which not only contributes to those irregular cycles, but can also make weight management much more challenging. That's something I always stress to patients. It's not just willpower, it's biological factors at play. But the encouraging part is that in the work that we do, even modest improvements, so changes like 5 or 10% of weight loss, lifestyle changes that can improve insulin sensitivity can actually restore those regular cycles and improve overall health. So those small steps can really make a big difference.
And it sounds like those small steps are going to be so important for so many women. With rates of obesity of 40% of women in the US population, I'm sure you see a number of patients that are either attempting pregnancy or who are pregnant and also living with obesity. What kinds of pregnancy complications do you find are more common in individuals that have, again, both pregnancy and obesity?
So we can see many different higher risks, including things like gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, so blood pressure issues, and increased rates of preterm delivery or cesarean section. These complications are important, but they don't really end with the pregnancy. They can also predict later health risks, including diabetes and heart disease and hypertension, like we previously mentioned. So I remember one woman that developed gestational diabetes, and again, we talked a lot about her high risk and sort of that potential for the future. And between her next pregnancy, this one and her next pregnancy, we were able to kind of really reduce those risks so that for the next pregnancy, she didn't have flag for the same gestational diabetes. So she kind of remembered what I told her. We kind of worked together. Because we kind of caught it early, we had that snapshot to the next pregnancy. We were able to intervene.
That's an amazing story, and I'm so glad you were able to share that with us because as a OBGYN, I mean, you're encountering women at so many different phases of the life cycle and you have those unique intervention points. I mean, you are truly one of our, most trusted providers. I can certainly say that as a woman myself. Speaking of trust and particularly trust with an OBGYN, we know that, and you stated it before, that a lot of times patients with obesity don't necessarily get the preventative screenings that they need. And we also know that obesity has been linked to higher rates of certain types of cancer, particularly endometrial cancer. Can you explain why that risk is elevated?
Yeah, so endometrial cancer is actually one of the clearest links between obesity and gynecological health. Those irregular ovulations that we previously mentioned, we can certainly see estrogen can be sort of higher and not balanced by progesterone. We often talk about hormones and their friends, their links, and estrogen certainly has to be balanced by that progesterone. So that unopposed estrogen is often the term that people can hear, and that will overstimulate that lining. So that's the big analogy I always give it in the office is that lining kind of grows and grows and grows and grows until it kind of sheds. So you get these unopposed episodes that can put us at increased risk. The uterus likes order. And so without that progesterone, it doesn't have that same order. However, the reassuring piece about why I love the uterus is endometrial cancer often announces itself with bleeding. So if the patients feel safe enough to report it and the providers take it seriously, we can actually detect it early and prevent progression. So this is kind of almost like the hopeful message I always like to share. And hopefully we can try to then promote and create risk reduction. So again, listen to your uterus. If it's not following those kind of pieces, then please reach out to your providers.
In addition to reaching out to a provider when there's a problem and certainly reaching out early on, are there any particular screenings or preventative care measures that you feel clinicians should prioritize for women who have obesity?
Yeah, so I like to think of menstrual health as almost like a vital sign. So those irregular or healthy cycles, those heavy cycles, sorry, should trigger evaluation. But clinicians, we should also be screening for diabetes, blood pressure, other metabolic risks, because these conditions can often cluster together. Beyond labs and scans, again, one of the biggest things that I always come back to is that psychological safety, so that patients actually feel comfortable bringing up their concerns. I mean, this is truly the essential part.
So in general, when you're working with patients who are anticipating pregnancy, what are some of the guidance that you give them to help reduce their risk of complications?
As we just mentioned, preconception counseling can make a big difference. So these inter-pregnancy moments, prepping and planning can really make a huge difference for people. So optimizing weight, blood sugars, blood pressures before the pregnancy can reduce the risk for both parent and baby. So these small steps like increasing physical activity or improving nutrition quality can actually shift the outcomes. And it's always surprising how they can be small pieces, right? So going for a walk after meals, sort of partnering with our other colleagues, so things like dietitian referrals, again, focusing on sort of any sort of movement concerns they might have by working with our physical therapy teams could be really, really, really helpful.
If you had one key message for women living with obesity about their reproductive health, what would it be?
So my key message is your health is not predetermined by your weight, right? Obesity affects cycles, fertility, pregnancy, cancer risk, all things that we've spoken about. But early screening, small lifestyle changes, and supportive stigma-free care can make a real difference. So if you're listening and struggling with any of these, irregular cycles, fertility concerns, pregnancy risks, remember that they're not actually personal failings. These are medical conditions that we can work on together. And the earlier you start, the more options that you have.
Thank you for your insights and compassion, Dr. Samson Payne. In our next episode, we'll explore challenges in gynecologic treatment and surgical procedures and the advances that are helping improve care for patients living with obesity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.